What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and yeah, enjoy the episode.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today on the show, we have Christopher Sturm. Hi, Christopher.
Hey guys.
Hey.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're excited to have you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So can you do our listeners a favor and introduce yourself to people who may not know who you are and what you got going on and tell the whole how you got started in photography thing?
Sure. So I'm a photographer, YouTuber, film nerd. There is an origin story on how I decided to get into film photography, but I think I've told it about a bajillion times.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I took a class in high school and I saw my first print that I ever took. I took a photo, I made it a print, and I saw it develop in a little tray. And I was like, oh my God, this is magic. This is insanity. I have to do this for the rest of my life.
Oh yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah. And so everyone's had kind of that moment, right? So I've spent the rest mm-hmm. of my days basically carrying a camera with me everywhere, which was the Canon AE-1 for a long time. And then, you know, after a few years of just casually carrying a camera around, I kind of got more serious with it after I tried processing some color negative film at home, and that was awesome. And then as far as YouTube, that was a weird thing I never thought I would get involved in, and it was very much forced upon me by a friend of mine.
Do it.
So I was on Instagram and a friend of a friend posted a story of their friend who was walking around with a point and shoot camera, which is the Olympus Stylus Infinity, which is a camera that I have. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, I have that same camera. And she responded. She's like, oh cool, no way. And so we started chatting. Her name's Christine. She has a really popular lifestyle, makeup, beauty, everything YouTube. And she's also a film photographer. So
cool.
Came down to LA to visit once. And she had me over and brought me on to her channel to talk about my favorite cameras. And she said that it went really well and it had a really good response. And she said, you should have your own YouTube channel to talk about cameras because of the way you talk about it. And I was like, no, I can't. And then, of course, you know, my ego got stroked a little bit too hard. And so I was like, you know what? I guess I will make a YouTube channel. And it was funny because that same time that I did that, that's when Matt Day had already kind of gotten started. Mm. And I was watching his Mamiya RB67 video and I was like, I can do that. Like, I could totally do that. And yeah, that's pretty much the story. And now I'm still doing it. It's been, I think it was 2017 when I started doing that.
Yeah.
And it's been a slow plodding move forward, but now I'm here and it's,
yeah,
I don't even know what's happening.
I feel like my channel was kind of slow starting too. I took a whole like 8 months off once, because I think I started around that time, 2017 or 2018. And yeah, you just, it's just a labor of love. You got to, you know, keep...
It's a job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a job.
It really is.
If you take time off, people notice and this stuff will fall off. And I'm just inconsistent too. And I've been really good recently about being more consistent, which is why, my numbers are actually going up now. But before, you know, I'd do a video and like 2 months later, maybe do another video and they'd be inconsistent with each other. It would just be like a free for all. But really early on, I got a really, I don't want to say rabid, like faithful group of people who really liked what I was doing. And so I kind of just did it for them. And then it's just slowly kind of gotten more and more as I meet more people and keep doing it. So yeah, it's really tough. And YouTube is such a mystery to me. I have no idea what I'm doing, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, your stuff looks great.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I think it's very, very well like stylized and consistent. And yeah, it's, you're doing good work.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I've really been trying to recently, because I'm really into cinematography and filmmaking and I'm not a filmmaker. I want to be, but I've never really done anything significant in that realm. But I really like to build looks and to make things look nice. And I really try to make at least the video look appealing so that people will want to look at it. But yeah. And then, you know, maybe the content will be interesting, hopefully.
That's so funny, because I feel the same way when I was, you know, I go on, I'm hot and cold with my YouTube channel all the time. There's times where I'm just like, okay, this is it. I'm ready to go. We're getting back in, and then I'll film a bunch of stuff. I'll do it. And I kind of started like where you're, you know, I love storytelling. I love shooting the video. I even love sitting down and editing the video. It's like definitely my favorite part. It's posting it is where I get all kind of, and it's not like, oh, the comments or anything like that. It's just like, I don't want to give it away. And not like, I don't want to give it away for free type stuff. It's just like, they're your babies. Just like, you know, your favorite photographs. Mm-hmm. They're like, I'm hanging on to this one. Like, this is a killer shot, you know, kind of feeling. And it's just like, I'm always like, man, maybe I'm just doing this for like home video sake or something like that. I don't know.
I mean, there's definitely that element to it, because I'll put something out I work really hard on. And I mean, I work really hard on all of it, but there'll be like a particular video I'm like really proud of and I'll put it up. And if it doesn't perform the way I hope it does, and by perform, I'm not looking at metrics like how much did I make in ad revenue. It's like, if I don't get enough eyeballs on it though to appreciate it, it's kind of like, oh man, like I was really proud of this. But then like I'll put up another video that like I did work hard on, but wasn't necessarily, it didn't have as much labor into it. There wasn't much, like, it just wasn't the same kind of like perspective, and it'll just be like out of the park. Like this last video I posted was comparing Lomo 800 and Kodak 800.
Oh, dude, great video.
Thank you. That one, I thought that was just a fun video. I got to meet up with Jason from Grainy Days. We hung out and took photos, and it was a really cool day. And I just thought it'd be a fun little thing. But that video just hit 10.5K today, and it's been up for 3-4 days or whatever. It's like, what in the hell is happening? Which, you know, that's great and all, but I just posted a couple of videos back, a video of me and my girlfriend driving across country, and it's like this little documentary that I did, and it didn't do nearly as many views, which it's fine, but it's kind of like, guys, watch that. It's really cool. Like, I did this whole thing, but, you know, you can't control it at all.
Right.
So it's just kind of like, you know, put it out and see what happens.
So what do you do for work?
I work as a photographer full time.
Great.
I'm mostly freelancing. I've been working for brands for the last couple of years, in-house and freelance. So I've worked for Levi Strauss as their photographer, Everlane, The North Face, a bunch of other places. I'm currently contract with Thrive Market. I don't know if you guys are familiar. They're like a organic, healthy grocery store delivery app.
Cool.
It's sounding familiar. So, I feel like I've heard ads for that. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. It's really in right now, I guess. And it's all like food photos and packaging photos and like lifestyle stuff for the website and stuff, which is like really nice, because I get to go into a studio, you know, 3 times a week and shoot cool stuff, which is fun. But then the rest of the time is mine to do whatever weird projects I want to do.
Man, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
That's the dream.
I was just telling you before we got on mic that I've got my first like paid gig since the pandemic. How has it been? Like sustaining, like what is set like during these crazy...
Oh, man. Well, it's strange because, as you probably know, being on set with other creatives or just being on set it's a family thing. It's like everyone's really close and everyone's like joking around and having fun. And like, you know, we're working, but we're also, we're in close quarters and we're, you know, it's not, it's work, but it's not really work. It's more like hanging out, you know?
Right.
And having to adjust that has been super strange. You know, everything's social distanced. Everything is like compliance officers on set. Everything is making sure, you know, if you're vaccinated or not, whatever, everyone's wearing a mask.
Right.
It's just been one of those things where I think especially in photography and, you know, filmmaking as well, you have to be prepared to kind of roll with whatever happens and make it successful regardless of what kind of comes your way. So I feel like that this industry, we're just uniquely positioned to deal with something like this. And it's been really impressive to see how well the crews I've been working on have acclimated to having to be really careful like this. So it's a little alien, but it's also kind of like, we all just were like, oh, this, we got this. Like, we're going to just handle it, whatever. So it's been fun to kind of be in that side of things and see like, wow, this is actually something that's possible. Because I thought when the pandemic hit, that was it. Pictures are no longer a thing. Like everything's going to be a render or something because there's no way. But we really, I mean, people really rose to the challenge and it's like, it's really impressive. So yeah, it's been crazy.
I'm a little nervous. I'm wondering if I'm going to have to wear those masks with like also a visor. Kind of like, like into that look. I'll do that. Sounds fun.
Yeah, I haven't done that yet. It's usually just like, you know, producer or whoever's, you know, looking at the screen, they're like way over there with like a screen, or you know, no one's just like up next to each other, no one's talking in each other's ear, everything is like from from afar, and you know, as long as you're wearing a mask and washing your hands, you're fine. So some people were really nervous and wondering how intense it was going to be, but it's just common sense. Like if you wash your hands, you cover your face, you're golden, like whatever.
I know for a while productions were requiring, like at least for like movies out here in LA, that everybody had to be, there was like an A team, a B team, and you know, you couldn't really cross, and like everybody had to get tested like once or twice a week.
Yeah.
It's just like
I've been on sets recently. Like I traveled up to Sacramento to do a couple shoots where you walk on set, you get tested. You walk off set, you get tested.
Right.
Everyone's got their temperature taken.
Right.
So there was like a month period I was getting tested every day. So I got tested 30, 60 times that month because I got tested on set, walking on, and then off, walking off set. And that's a crazy amount of tests. But, you know, people needed to do something. You know, we needed to figure out what to do to make everybody feel safe and be safe. So,
Well, I think a lot of that, too, has to do with the percentage of cases in your city and town and state and stuff like that, too.
Yeah.
So if it's higher, they're going to be doing more testing and there's going to be more restrictions. And because my mom works at a retirement home and I know they go by state percentages. Like if the state's at 10%, they get tested twice a week or three times a week or something. So I just think it's all about, and not to say that I don't really pay attention to the numbers anymore. It used to be like a daily thing for me where I would look and, oh this. But I kind of stopped that because it was destroying me mentally.
Oh, yeah.
And, but I don't think it's nearly as bad as it was. You know what I mean? I think a lot of people, they call it the new normal. We're all kind of, you know, it's kind of gross to think about if you think about like that we really had to put on this like wash your hands for 20 seconds. I mean, come on. Like we should know to wash our hands for 20 seconds.
Have you seen how there's basically no flu or like incidents and like there's not a lot of like people aren't having colds? Like that's just a testament because we're washing our hands so much. We were so gross before. People weren't washing their hands. We were touching our face so much. And now it's like I barely touch my face unless I've washed my hands now. And I'm super cognizant of that. And I haven't gotten sick in a year. And that just goes to show how freaking gross we are, you know?
Yeah. It has been nice not having to have a cold. It has been nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you guys get vaccinated?
Yes.
Yes.
Nice. Did you have the second vax like down day where you were hit by a train?
Yes. And I had to work too. So I was a miserable little baby at work when I was like, no, I'm not. It was rough.
Yeah. I was down for like half a day.
Yeah. You were. I remember that. Yeah,
I was
you
sick.
Were just like, oh.
But it wasn't bad. It's like, you know, getting the flu shot, I think. You just kind of feel like crummy for a little while. Thankfully, it wasn't. And, you know, everybody's having a wide range of experiences, like either nothing or the full-blown, like, in bed for 2 days.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what to expect because the first one I got, I didn't even feel the needle. And I had no
same.
I had no effects whatsoever. So I was like, oh, I guess I'm a trooper. Like, I guess I'm ready to go. But the second one, the day of, I was okay, but I had a little bit of a headache at the end of the day. And then the next day, I felt like trash for like maybe 6 hours. And then I felt amazing. Like at the end of the day, like at night, I was like, oh man, I'm like rejuvenated. It was really
your
weird.
Body was like antibodies.
Yeah, pretty much.
Let's go.
But it's been crazy on set, but it's also, like I said, I'm really impressed with how people have stepped up to like make sure we're all safe, which is great.
Yeah.
So true.
Now, I know you mentioned on your YouTube channel you don't shoot film like for the aesthetic. Is that you? I know you've one of the people, we've talked to a few people who are like learned on film versus like, you know, that was digital, then they came back, or like that vice versa. How's that been with like your career, I guess? Like, are you shooting a lot of film just for personal stuff, or is it also professionally?
Yeah, so, you know, when I went to school, there was no digital camera that was like affordable, because I'm ancient. I graduated high school in 2004, and that was like kind of when I think the first 5D had just come out.
Yeah.
Probably 2001, maybe, or I'm not sure when it was, but you know, it wasn't affordable for people like me. And so I was just doing film because that was just all there was for me.
Right.
And so I learned everything about photography with film. I didn't touch a digital camera until, oh man, like after college. And so there was no like, ooh, look at this like aesthetic for me. It was always just like, how do I make this exposure correct? And how do I make it look the way I want? There was like, you know, if I wanted it moodier, expose it this way. If I wanted it like more high key, expose it this way. But there was no like, there's no like really thinking about grain. Grain was just like inherent in the medium. And it's just kind of like, if you paint on canvas, you're going to get that texture. Same thing with film.
So true. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I did start shooting digital, for me, it was more like, wow, this is sterile. This doesn't have any like, but it also is flexible, which is also like kind of what came with it. So now my digital and film workflow is exactly the same. I scan, everything comes in flat. I scan my film flat, my RAWs come in flat, and then I just apply the contrast and saturation that I want. I fuss with the exposure a little bit, and that's literally it. And I can get my digital images to look like my film images, because it's just a matter of like, how did I expose this or whatever? And
yeah,
that was kind of out of necessity, because like I like editing film. And I like editing video, but Jesus, like I can't do sitting in front of a computer for that long. I just can't do it. I'm not built that way. I would much rather sit in front of a sink and develop film that way. Even scanning is sometimes, like I have an Epson V550, which God bless it, it's the slowest, you know, scanner of all time. But like sitting here, I'm just like, oh, come on, like just get it done. But so getting that workflow to kind of like be the same has really helped me, first of all, just be quick. And so I'm not making these decisions where it's like, oh, should I like tweak this film this way or that way? I could, but it's more like, okay, get this to look the way I want it to look and then be done with it. And I've been really lucky that I've kind of stumbled across a workflow that works really, really well for me. And it has gone over to my professional stuff as well. So I do have clients that want me to shoot digital because they want to see the screen. You know, they want to see the images coming in. But then I have clients who they don't care what it looks like as I'm doing it. They want to see the finished product. And so with that, I have so much latitude. So I would say 50% of my clients I'm shooting film for, and 50 I'm doing digital because I'm in studio with them. And it's funny because the clients that want me to shoot digital will be like, oh, I want it to look like film. And it's like, my dude. And then and then the clients who, you know, will get the film stuff, like sometimes they'll be like, oh, this looks like digital. I'm like, yeah, I shot slide film. And it's like, you know, it's, you know, so it's kind of funny because I'll do digital, I'll shoot it digital, and I'll be like, I want to kind of look, get this portrait kind of look, or whatever, right? I want the pastel-y kind of look. And I'll do that. And I shoot Fuji, and I think Fuji colors, I think, have a very, it's very easy to kind of achieve that look, you know, from a standstill. Like, you can really get that quickly. And so I'll have clients be like, oh, you shot film? That's cool. And I'm like, no, that's digital. Like, that's just a digital thing.
Fooling them.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, they're both tools. And I don't think that you should limit yourself with either. Film is so, you know, expansive and wide ranging, and there's so much you can do with it. There's so much you can, people don't realize, if you scan film as flat as possible, you can push and pull that stuff forever. And, right. it's sometimes better than digital, because digital has a ceiling when it comes to highlights, but film almost doesn't. And so, what I'm trying to convey to people is, like, you know, whatever you decide to do, like, you're not limited to your medium necessarily. You can figure out ways to kind of get whatever you want out of whatever you're using. And even within film, you know, people love Portra, and obviously for a good reason, but, like, I can make pretty much any film look like Portra in post. Like, you don't have to shoot Portra to get the Portra look. Like, for instance, I can shoot, you know, Lomo 400, or, like, even Ultramax, or even, like, Fuji Superia. Like, you can make Superia look like Portra. You definitely can. If you scan it and let the scanner do the profile, and you have the green shadows and all that stuff, yeah, it'll definitely look like Superia, but it's film. It's got that latitude. You can do what you want with it. And so I really do think that there's, like, people that have that preference for, I guess, what you might call derogatorily, like, the VSCO look, which is, like, you know, a little bit underexposed. You got the shadows are kind of crushed, and you've got, like, the graininess. And that's a look. It's a vibe. And I think that people like it for a reason. I do like it in certain circumstances. I've seen people shoot film that way, and it's just like, man, that just looks really good. It just feels nostalgic and nice. But there's also people who are like, you know, they want a certain color palette and they want a certain look, and it's not necessarily like what normies would think is film. It's what, you know, what this film's capable of instead. So there's no wrong or right. It's just kind of like, use it for what you want to do, you know, experiment, play around with it. And I don't know, you know, just have fun with it. I feel like I'm going on such a tangent, but it's so connected to my work. No. Like, it's such a, it's so, like, tied to the tenet of, like, what I do with film, because if film went away, I'd be so sad, but I could still work. I could still do it, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, God forbid that will never happen. Yeah. Please.
See, I think that's, like, a giant skill in itself, though, because with digital, I could never get an edit right. I either overprocess the crap out of it where it just looks like I added every single Instagram filter you possibly could have added to it, a massive vignette, and then I'm just like, but that is, and then when I shoot film, you know, I usually just go with the presets. I have an Epson scanner too, and I just let it, I mean, I have scanned flat and stuff like that before. If I'm trying to save an image, if it's a little blown out or a little under, I'll make sure not to have any sort of processing on it. So I can try to get the most out of it in post. But I think it was Clubhouse. I was on a pedestal and you were in the room. We'd had this conversation about, I was like, why would you take Portra and edit it like 400H, you know? And it's just like, it's stupid. I was just in one of those moods where I was like Mr. Purist all the time. And then I was like, wait, why do I care? Like, what does it matter?
Because people want you to care. Like, there are people out there who gatekeep film, and they're like, Portra or this or that, or Ektar's bad, and it's like, wait a second, like, who the heck are you to say this? Like, why are you limiting people? It's so weird.
Yeah. When you say that about Ektar, I really didn't shoot like people with that, because that's just what people said. Like, you can't shoot for portraits. And I was like,
they just said it, and then you're like, okay.
Yeah. But then, like, look at, like, Wendy Laurel, a former guest, and that's all she does, and it's like incredible, you know?
It just goes to show that, like, there's so much influence in this sphere of the film community, and, like, there are certain things, and I guess I'll get into it later, but I was gonna say there's just some people in this sphere that are very influential, and I think subconsciously, not even on purpose, they sometimes influence younger people or people just getting into it in not such a positive way. And it's frustrating because, like, my whole message has always tried to be like, try everything.
Yes.
Throw it against the wall, see what happens, because you're creating. You're not, you know, this isn't algebra. This is like, this is film. This is fun. It's art.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I heard back in the day, like, oh, Ektar is not for skin tones, and I was like, what do you mean? Like,
yeah.
And I love Ektar. I've been shooting Ektar underground like quietly for years because I love it. I love that film so much.
Dude, I love it too.
But I get so much crap for it. Whenever I pull it out of my bag, they're like, Ektar. And it's like, oh, ew, man, come on.
I don't understand. Anytime I shoot, I'm always like, why do I not shoot this that much?
Exactly.
It's gorgeous. It is so Good.
I think there's a underground hatred for vibrant colors in the film community. And I understand that it's very in vogue to be pastel, but like,
yeah, yeah.
But I feel like every single person who, like, I've given roles of like Velvia or Provia to friends, or like even Ektachrome, and been like, yeah, try shooting this and I'll develop it for you. And they give it back and I show them the scans and they're just like, the colors, like what? And I'm just like, yeah, you're used to seeing what everyone's always doing, which is Portra 400, shot at 200, blown the hell out. Yep. And you're missing out on this whole palette of color that you don't even realize is there. So yeah,
it makes me want to try more. I mean, we talk about it a lot on the show, but just I gravitate towards Portia, but I'm learning to like grab other stuff because
I could go on for hours about Portia, because just to give a little bit of my thoughts on it, it's a beautiful film, it's a professional film, it's got crazy latitude, but it's a crutch. And people get super into it. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm so glad that so many people are buying it so that Kodak can still make film.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's also like the default. It's like the default setting.
It is.
It is.
When you say it like it, because that's what I do. I open my fridge and I'm like, I just like grab the Portra.
And there's nothing wrong with that because it is a beautiful film and it has so much. But then when I talk to people about why they don't use other films, one of the things I hear a lot is that, oh, nothing has the latitude of Portra. And while they're, you know, pretty much right, Portra has such latitude, but I don't see anybody using that latitude. Everyone says that, but no one's taking Portra to the extremes.
Yeah,
right.
You know? No, you're right.
Everyone's doing the, what is it, the new topographies. Everyone's doing that style of shooting, which is great, and it's really fun, and I'm really enjoying seeing all that output. But like, if you're going to tout how good Portra is as far as the limitations, like, let me see you stretch Portra to the absolute limit. But no one does, and it's like, okay, all right. But find another reason, I guess, if I ask, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like Megan Barrett. Mm-hmm. She, former guest, amazing underwater photographer. That's not all she does, but she shoots a lot of underwater photography. But she will shoot whatever she has. Mm-hmm. She was saying that. And she was like, and people might think I'm crazy because I take Ektar and I push it to like 800 or 1600. And it's just like so much comes out of that. When you open the box that you've been in, because everybody's doing the same thing all the time. Mm-hmm. So you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to, you know. And when you finally explore, like I love shooting Lomo 800 at like 16 or 3200. I push the crap out of it. So it just, it's so weird. And you don't see that all the time.
But people don't realize that the rated ISO on a film is the minimum. Like it's not, it's not the maximum. You can go, don't go too low underneath it because you're going to start getting the underexposure thing going on. You can still do a little bit. But like the sky's the limit with a lot of these films, especially if it's, if it's something like, you know, Lomo 800's got a really high ceiling. I've pushed... let's see, what is that stuff? C200, Fuji C200. I've pushed that to 3200 and it looks kind of alien, but it's really cool. And I mean, just being able to kind of, I mean, pushing film is becoming something that people do a lot more nowadays, but it's still kind of like unknown territory for a lot of people. And, you know, I'll do something where I'm shooting like Lomo 400 at like, I don't know, 1,000 or something. People are like, that's going to look like crap. And I'm like, how do you know that? Have you done it? You should try it.
Let's see.
Yeah. And I mean, it's another part of the thing where it's like, this is a tool and it's not, it's especially with film. The cool thing about film and that people, I feel like, talk about but don't really practice is that film is not this like box that's confining. Like it's very much like an open space to explore in, whereas digital kind of feels more like that because you have to be a little more careful, especially with highlights. But film, you don't have that. So you have this ability to kind of like really explore. But I feel that, I feel this like latent fear of doing so. And I want people to just bust through that and try things out, you know?
You're inspiring me because I always shoot typically at box speed.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if that's your comfort zone.
Yeah. Besides like, you know, rating 400 to 200, but I never go crazy. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it makes me want to really see what happens, you know?
Yeah. I mean, some of the coolest stuff I've ever done, initially at least, was like shooting a roll. Like I had a roll of Portra it was 400. I had it loaded up in a camera and I went out during the day and shot some frames, but I had a bunch of frames left over and I was hanging out at night with some people and I was like, it's dark, but I only have this roll of film. But there's interesting stuff, so I'm gonna shoot the rest of this roll at 1600 and just say screw it and see what happens. The stuff I shot earlier in the day was like pretty blown out, but the stuff I shot that night, I couldn't believe how nice the film looked. And it was just like a, you know, I'm just going to push it. Like, whatever. I didn't prepare. I'm pretty sure I didn't do calculations correctly, but it came out really, really nice. And I don't know, just, I want people to try it. So I think you should. Right. I think you should try shooting some Portra 400 at whatever.
Because me, I would just be like, oh, well, that sucks. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't even think to like do that, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm not in that headspace, but I you're inspiring me. Good. I like it.
I'm glad, because I see, you know, and I've seen friends of mine in those same situations where they just like try something and they get so excited and they text me like, dude, you won't believe what happened. Like, I did this with this film and look how cool it looks. It's so inspiring to see other people try that and get excited by it, because there's that, you know, you get excited by film in the first place. Like, you start doing film and you're super excited about it. But then, you know, I've seen people get to a point where they're like, okay, I can shoot film, but like, what else is there? It's film, you know, done. Mm. It's like, no, explore, check it out. Yeah. There's so much to do.
So how long have you been developing your own film?
Since high school. So I'm 35 now, since I was 14.
So you've just been developing straight away?
Yeah, so
I started because I graduated high school in 2001. Mm-hmm. So I was doing the black and white, develop in the sink, print. That's how I basically made work. Mm-hmm. But I've been sending my stuff to labs pretty much since then. So I think that's crazy. You've been like
It was one of those things where, like, when I learned film, my whole understanding of the process was that you shoot the film, you develop the film, you print the film. Like, that's the whole process. So I never got really divorced from that. I always thought that, like, there's a chain of custody to the film and I wanted to be in control of it.
That's how Timothy is.
Yeah. And it's you know, so I did D76 up until after college for a long time. And I just did black and white film. So color film, I'd take it to, you know, Costco or whoever.
Right.
But, you know, after a while, I started getting more interested in shooting more color film. And it was still just a hobby for me at that time. So I wasn't really like pushing myself. But then there was a time where I had a roll of Superia and I was with my band somewhere and I took a bunch of pictures with my Olympus point and shoot on it. And I could have sent it out to get it developed, but I was like, I don't know what my deal was. I was like antsy. I was like, I want to see it now. Like, I want to look at it.
Yeah.
So I was like, what happens if I just use D76 to process a Superia?
Oh, that's fun. I've done that before.
Maybe this will be cool. And I thought for sure I was going to ruin the film, but I was like, you know what? Onward. Let's do it. And it just looked like black and white film after I processed it. It looked great. And I have all these pictures that are black and white. And if I showed them to you, you'd probably be like, yeah, maybe that's Tri-X or maybe that's whatever, you know, Ilford. No, it's Superia. And it turned out okay. And then I realized, like, oh my God, I can do everything I want ever. And then I realized, like, ah, C41's a thing, so I can try that. But when I first got my hands on C41 chemistry, I didn't want to fuss around with the temperatures. Like, I'd never had used C41, but the first thing I thought was like, oh, instructions? Nah, I'm going to do something else. And so I had been using Rodnall to stand develop film for a long time. And I really had gotten the stand development down to a pretty good science with my black and white film. And I thought, can you stand develop C41 film? Like, would that look okay? Guess what, guys? Uh-oh. It looks fantastic. It looks great.
Nice.
And so I figured it out. You know, room temperature. I got the temperature, or I got the timings right. And I just like experimented and like, you know, if you're okay with like maybe a little more grain, it looks really good. It looks just like you can barely tell. And so for a while, I was just stand developing all my color film, which people were like, you're doing what? Like, what's wrong with you? Eventually, I started the sous vide method a while back. This was a bit before CineStill came out with their TCS 1000. And then I was kind of like, you know what? If I'm being serious about this, if this is my job, like I want to have a controlled, you know, environment. So I started doing the real C41 processing, and then I got the TCS 1000, which was like really fun and such an exciting time, because that kind of was a flag. It was like a flag on the mountain that was like, film is here to stay. We're developing new products. This is going to be a film thing. And like, I got really excited about it. I think CineStill as a company has done so much for the film community.
I agree.
And people don't even know sometimes, you know, how much they've really contributed to the community.
Yeah.
And now it's like, I'm developing film 2 or 3 times a week. I'm shooting like at least 10 rolls a week if it's just personal stuff. I'm doing, you know, the Tetanol now, and I've just got an ECN2 kit from my friend, Colton.
Ooh.
He rolls.
I want one of those.
Yeah. You know, I've been so interested in it. I know Quiet We're Dreaming, does their cinema film, and then my friend Colton rolls his own, and so he gave me some 500D and some 250D, and I got some of the ECN2 stuff. I haven't developed it yet, but I'm going to soon. I'm going to do a video about it. I'm very excited.
Yeah.
But it's such a different process. Like, I thought E6 was going to be difficult, but E6 was a breeze, especially if you've done C41 before.
Yeah, it's like the exact same
exactly,
thing.
Exactly, just a little bit warmer, you know, one more extra step. But ECN2 is a little bit different. It's a little more exacting. And also, you get a flat negative when you're done. So it's not going to have the color you want. You have to go in and tweak it, which I'm really excited about because that's what I do anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right up your alley right there.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to see if that becomes... I'm really actually worried because I have so much invested in the C41 process that I do. Like, am I going to have to buy all this other stuff so I can... Because if I fall in love with it, if that becomes like my favorite thing, like, damn it, I'm the ECN2 guy now, like, crap. Like,
and you're gonna fall in love. That's just how it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's just
luckily I don't have roommates anymore, so that I can have it everywhere, which is fine.
There you go. That's the best.
Yeah, thank God.
Now we just need to get Chris.
I was hoping
you just need to
come back.
You just need to order.
I know.
Order yourself a kit.
Yeah.
Just order one.
Yeah.
Order one and let it sit there for like a couple weeks and let it, you know, let it talk to you. Like, hey, come on.
You're in LA,
try
right?
Me out.
Yeah. Well, now we just bought a house. So now that I have the extra space, there's like in our laundry room, there's a sink. And I'm like, that sink is like calling my name.
I've had some friends who have been like, hey, like, do you want to show me how to do this? Like, if you want to jump in on a, on a workshop, I'd be more than happy to help you, you know, get your feet wet, so to speak. Yeah, it's really fun. So I don't know. I think you should do it.
I feel like there's a lot of, I mean, there's just like parts of the, we've talked about this on the show as well, like parts of the process that people don't like love, you know?
Click. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. People who shoot to shoot, who don't really care about the end result, or they are not a printer, and there's people who like love to print, and you know, so I just feel like developing and scanning isn't that for me, but I'm really trying to jones with it. So,
and you've developed,
I think,
black and white film before, right?
Oh yeah, like that's how I, like, same as you, like I developed my own, like in my parents' sink, because that's all that there was, you know.
Yeah. Like, I think for me it's just kind of, it's like it's like that time, because it takes like a little bit less than an hour to fully go through a full C41 process, because you know, you heat up the chemicals, you bag every, you put it in the bag, you spool it up, and then you go and you do the actual thing, and then you hang it up to dry. So end to end, it's about an hour. That's like an hour for me to like listen to a podcast, which is off. It's often analog talk or something else.
Oh, thank you.
And then, you know, I'm just chilling out, you know, I'm doing my little agitations. I'm eating a snack most likely. And it's just like such a nice moment, cuz I'm relaxing. I'm not doing a lot of work, but I'm also developing film at the same time, and it's like accomplishing.
Exciting.
Yeah, I'm accomplishing something. And it's just like, it's just kind of like that little moment where it's like, I'm doing something 100% for me. Even if it's a project that I'm doing for someone else, it's still like, that is my moment to like be for me, you know? So
yeah,
it's different for everyone, I guess.
That's what I get out of it too. Mm-hmm. I always take the developing process for me is just my, it's like yoga, you know?
Yeah.
What I mean? You go and you do it for an hour, 30 minutes or something like that to kind of cleanse and clear
get
your
a good
mind.
Stretch.
And yeah, it's something that I look forward to so much, because it's just some me time, and maybe not everybody wants to hang out with themselves, because you know, we're with ourselves all the time, but I like that little like disconnect of, oh, it's 3:30, it's time to put the, you know, this in, it's time to do that.
You know what's really funny is like the people that were at the beginning of the pandemic like making bread, like the bread people.
Yeah.
Those are the people that have been hitting me up to show them how to do chemistry for C41, because they are the same kind of people. They want to do that like hands-on, like me time, like whatever thing, and like bread is very much the same thing. So it's just really funny
to
see people pivoting pivoting from bread to film.
Man,
I love
good
that.
Times.
Yeah.
Good times.
I'm here for that. I love bread, but I don't know. I think, oh man, would I take film over bread if I had to choose?
Don't, that's too hard.
I can't even, you're right, it's not. I do love a good sourdough, but damn, I really.
Oh, me too. I'm so glad you said that. I was just like, I'm not going to say it. Sourdough is so basic. And then you said it and I'm like, yes, okay.
The thing is,
I'm not the only one that loves sourdough.
The thing about sourdough is very much like film. It's depending on the environment, you're going to get so many different things because of the yeasts and the air and stuff. So
yes,
there's like a ton of different types of sourdoughs, and there's one for everyone. And, you know, not every single one's the same. And some have more latitude than others. But they're all delicious. That's how I feel about film.
Do you ever? I push my sourdough to 1600 all the time.
Nice. Funny.
So, Christopher, what other like projects do you have, anything in the like personally in the works? Any photo books? Any more like documentary style YouTube videos? Because I did watch that one and I really did enjoy.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad. Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to do more long form documentary style stuff because that was really something that spoke to me. I love doing my YouTube videos, but sometimes they can be very kind of to the point. It's like, this is a video about this. And then I talk about it and I show you some examples and it's like, cool, super easy to digest. Like there's not a lot of commitment there. But building a story and like telling that story through visuals, it was kind of like a thing that I always knew I wanted to do. And then when I finally did this last project and I did the documentary going across the country, it was just like an awakening of like realizing, oh yeah, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to tell stories. Like, got it. And it's different. It's being able to tell a story through visuals and, you know, not have to say the loud part or the quiet parts out loud. Like, that's hard. It's very hard. Like, I want to jump in and explain something and I want to give context, but you have to let the visuals do that for you. And that's really, really difficult. But when you feel like you get to a point where the visuals are giving the context, it's so rewarding.
Yeah.
So I really want to get into doing more documentary stuff. I do have a few projects in the works that are not fully formed just yet.
Mm-hmm.
I am doing is.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Zine, because I feel like when I was growing up, zines were the thing, you know, the DIY zine thing was like, I loved that. Like, I came from like the post-hardcore, the punk scene, like all that stuff was like, you got a zine and you were like on your floor, just like looking at it for hours because it was so cool. You know, someone's like real labor of love and everyone's putting out books and I'm really like stoked about that. I think that's amazing and I want to see more of that. And I would love to put a book out one day, but I feel like that DIY scrappy element of a zine just appeals to me personally like so much more. I feel like it's also more accessible.
Photo books can
be expensive and like that's not anyone's fault. Like that's just a function of like, you know, binding a book and selling it. It's just gonna be expensive and some people can't afford it. Like there are definitely times in my life where I wanted a photo book. Like Jason Lee did a Polaroid book, an 8x10 Polaroid book, like a couple years ago, and at the time I was just broke and I couldn't buy it. It's out of print now, it's sold out. I just can't get it. But if he had made a zine that was like $5 plus shipping, I would have had that thing, you know, immediately.
Exactly. Yeah.
And my whole goal is not to, I'm not trying to put down this legacy that's like gilded and like all like serious. My whole goal is to just get as many eyeballs on what I'm doing as possible and to like inspire people to also try what I'm doing or to like just get people excited about film and photography in different ways. And the best way to do that is to make it accessible. And so I've got a couple of zine projects in the works. They're going to be collaborative with other artists and other photographers as well. So I'm really excited about that stuff. That's in its infancy. I just started a podcast.
Nice.
Yeah. And people have been telling me I should do it for so long, and I've been like, you know what? They don't need another white guy doing a podcast. We have plenty. But a friend of mine, Mike, he's in the UK. He's a Scottish guy, and he's really, really funny. He's a gifted photographer, and I think that we have a good chemistry. And he was like, hey, man, I want to do a podcast. I want you to co-host it. I'll do all the work. Just you show up and be funny, and like, we'll talk. And I was like, all right.
Oh, fine. Nice.
So cool. We started that. We recorded our first episode, and then our next episode, our first guest is going to be Kyle McDougall. So we'll be doing that. I don't know when, sometime soon. It's definitely, it's photography adjacent, but it's not competition for any photography podcasts out there. It's definitely going to be a little bit different. So that's happening. It's called the Spooky Park Bench, which is definitely a cheeky reference. Ooh, to...
I love that.
It's a cheeky reference based on a conversation we had about photographers who do night photography and are into that whole like aesthetic of like, you know, spooky park benches. So that'll be fun.
That's so cute.
Yeah. And I'm excited about that. What else am I doing? I don't even know why I'm going to bring this up, but I am recording an album. I don't know when it'll be out.
Nice.
So just you, or are you with a band?
Just me. It's going to be one of those things where I just record and write everything. And then eventually, maybe if bands are a thing again, I'll probably put together something. But
yeah,
so far it's just been me. I play all the instruments, and it's just, you know, it's very much like dad rock. It's like it's like Radiohead and The National and all that stuff.
Dude, I'm right there with you, man.
Great. Yeah. So it's very much that. So if you want to be bored and or crying, that's the album for you, maybe. So we'll see how that pans out.
Man, what's next for the channel specifically? Do you have any grand plans for it, or are you just gonna keep going along?
It's really hard. The biggest thing that's been hard with my channel is like kind of figuring out what I want it to be. In the beginning, it was super educational, and it was very much like my first episode is like, this is medium format, this is what it looks like, this is the difference between that and 35 millimeter, and it was kind of like all over the place. And then now what I'm trying to do is keep it, I want to be like not separated from the community. Like I want it to be like, I'm just a guy, and I wanted to do this, so I'm doing it. You can also do this. And I'm, you know, I've been trying to use my platform as like, you know, a privileged white dude to try to like lift up, you know, other voices and other people who are doing cool things and artists who are not, you know, maybe don't have a platform. And so what I'm trying to do coming up in the rest of this year is to spotlight some younger photographers who are doing cool things, other artists who are doing cool things, really start working on my documentary style stuff. And I want to do more episodes that are kind of showcasing other photographers' work through that lens of like telling a story. And I'm still kind of in the planning stages of how to even, you know, do that. I've been talking to Kyle McDougall, who I don't know if you guys know, he's a documentary videographer. Like that's his thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he's been really helpful and kind of like giving me advice, which has been great because I have no idea what I'm doing. So I'm hoping the channel, I just want it to be more substantive. I'm very lucky that I just landed my first paid sponsorship with Skillshare, which has been really
Congrats.
Yeah, it's been really cool. It's super interesting, and you know, with that I'm able to kind of do a little bit more. So I'm hoping to basically carve out time where it's like, these are the days that I'm working on the channel, and this is like I don't have a schedule or anything. Like I come up with an idea, I film it that day or the next day, and it goes up too. Whenever. So
yeah.
And that works for a while, and then you got people who, you know, want to sponsor you or want to, you know, collaborate, and you're just like, oh crap, I gotta like plan now, like
yeah.
Like this thing, the last video with Jason, Grainy Days, we just were like, hey, you want to hang out? Like, sure. Mm-hmm. And then I asked him if he tried this film, and he's like, no. And I'm like, let's shoot some film. And then I brought my, I shot the whole thing on my phone. So like, I wasn't even planning it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm trying to be more intentional in general with the channel, and try to be less, I want it to be less about me and more about the community at large. So that's something I'm trying to figure out how to do. Basically.
That's great.
Yeah.
I think that's really lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really cool that you're doing the podcast thing too, because I always try to promote people doing stuff like that, because there's, you know, there's somebody that wants to hear your side of the story, mm-hmm. you know what yeah. I mean? And connects to you more, or what you're doing more. I mean, yes, all we need is another podcast. And it's like, you know what? Yeah, there's somebody sitting out there that's like, doesn't really vibe with our show.
Right.
It goes over and, you know, finds you guys or, you know,
C41. Yeah.
It's just, there's like a, I don't know. I just feel like the more we keep throwing stuff out there, the longer this thing's going to be
yeah.
around. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
like whatever I have to do to keep Kodak and Fuji and Polaroid and all those people keeping their machines running and their mm-hmm. you know, their workers being fed and all that stuff, you know.
That's I agree. Yeah.
I was going to say it's also like inspiring each other too, you know.
Yes.
If we can like
yeah.
keep each other fired up, I think that's really important too.
Yeah. I mean, being a longtime listener of you know, Analog Talk, I've always been like, I want to be in that room with those guys. I've been so excited when you reached out, because I was like, yes, like, oh, finally. And like, it is really that thing where, you know, on my videos, I get comments like, your intro is too long, you talk too much, blah, blah, blah. You know, I get stuff like that, which is
yeah.
valid. I do talk too much. But I have opinions on everything, and I've been
right.
been shooting film and developing film for so long that, you know, I don't think I'm an authority. I just think that I have enough experience where if someone
right.
needs help or direction,
right.
I can put you in that direction, you know? And so where in the YouTube videos, it's really difficult to have that long form kind of like discussion or me just like barfing out my opinions. On the podcast, we can have it be an hour and a half
right,
long
right,
and people
right.
will listen
yeah,
to it. And you know, that's what's so great about, you know, podcasts like Analog Talk and podcasts like, you know, C41. I get to listen to people who I don't normally hear from, and I hear their perspective, and it's a conversation. It's not like people staring at a camera and being like, here's what my opinion is, and you
yeah.
have to listen to me. And
yeah.
It's like, no, like, I'm a person, my opinions can change, you know, my thoughts are, you know, changing second to second, and it just behooves me to be like, okay, if I have all these opinions, if I have this expertise to like share with people, I need to do it across more formats, and limiting myself to just YouTube because I'm afraid of people thinking I'm stupid for having a podcast. It's like, no, like the goal is to help this community. And if that means that like, if I make a podcast, people will listen to it and they'll gain knowledge or whatever, great,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to do it. So
right,
that's
right.
where I'm at, yeah.
Plus, like, having conversations is one of the main, like, what we love so much about it is we get to, like, have these conversations with people and hear their side and perspective. I mean, every time I end record, I'm like, woo!
Yeah, fired up.
That's so
fired
good!
Up.
So...
And
yeah.
it's like, I've been a musician. I've been a guitarist for like most of my life. I love guitars. I'm a total gear nerd. But like,
mm-hmm.
I can talk to you about guitars for like 40 minutes. And then I'm like, okay, can we talk about anything else?
Yeah.
But do you
yeah.
notice, like with film, I just don't get sick of it. Like if anyone
yeah.
comes
yeah.
up
yeah.
to me,
yeah.
people are in my DMs every day just like asking like, you know, objectively like inane questions like about film, but I'd never get tired of it because it's
right.
just like you want knowledge and you're coming to me and you like have a question, like let's talk about it. And it's always a really fun conversation. People are so happy to like just have that conversation with you, and it's so nerdy but in like the best way and so fulfilling. So yeah, I don't know,
dude, so
yeah
true.
I feel that way about film photography a lot. Sometimes I'll just be like, I'll get overcome by it. I'll just be like, man, I just love this so much. Like, I just love this. I'm just so happy it found me, or I found it, or I don't know how we, you know, here we are, but yeah.
Yeah. And who would have thought that like literally just photographs, like something you use to take pictures, would be such a community building thing?
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I've met some of my favorite people through
Same.
Taking pictures. The house I'm living in was my friend Christine. This was her house. And then she bought a house down the street. I moved into this house. And we're like best friends now. And we met because
yeah.
I DM'd her about her stupid Olympus
yep.
camera. You
yep.
know? And like now we're lifelong friends. You know, my girlfriend's super supportive. She has been like learning about photography from me, film photography, because she did do photography. She has like she has a Ricoh GR that she had before.
Ooh,
yeah.
She's done film before, but because I'm such a film nerd, she's like, okay, well, let's do more. And like,
yeah,
come on, finding a girlfriend who wants to do film photography, like, come on,
that's pretty solid.
She's definitely a keeper, no question. You know, and then like, I've met amazing people like Sam Elkins. Like, he lives,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, 5 minutes from me, and we've been hanging
yeah.
out, and like, he's been such a cool resource, and like, he's so inspiring, because like, that kid just goes. Like, he has
right.
such great ideas, and like, he never stops. And it's like really inspiring to see him do that. So like when I feel like I'm in a rut, I see one of his videos, I'm just like, I have no excuse whatsoever. And then Jason from Grainy Days, that guy is exactly how he is in his videos almost. He's such a nice guy.
He is.
And so fun to hang out with. Like I was so inspired hanging out with him. And like I met this group. So when I went with Jason, I brought my friend Hector, who I met through a film photography group on Instagram. Like this guy, Austin, invited me. He was like, yo, I've been a fan of your YouTube channel. Like I have this group chat on Instagram. It's called Photographers and Coffee Shops Getting Coffee. Do you want to be, do you want to come on in? And I was like, dude, get me in there. And I met this group of people like that are just on fire for film. Mm-hmm. And all they talk about all day long is film. And they're so genuine. They're so like accepting. And like, I just moved to LA in October. I had friends here, but I didn't have like a group really.
I didn't know that. We should get coffee or something. I didn't know you were like a newbie.
Oh yeah. No, I've only been like, I moved to Highland Park in October, and then I moved to Mount Washington and the place I'm at now in December. And so, yeah, I just got here. And so, and this group of dudes, it's not just dudes, but this group of people were just like, you're one of us now. Like, sorry, too bad. And it's like, we meet up at coffee shops and we go on photo walks, and then like, me and Hector really like hit it off. He's actually an incredibly gifted photographer. You should check him out. His Instagram is it's at @HECCCT. Incredible photographer, such a cool guy. I told him I'd shout him out, so this is your shout out.
Heck yeah. Love it.
Yeah, so it's, and that community is like, because you can have something you're good at and you can be isolated because of it, or you can just like, it could be a solo thing, but never in my life has film been like a solo thing. It's always been, there's always been somebody else who's been like there to help or to like give me inspiration or to like bounce ideas off of. And you know, it's like music in that way too. Like musicians, I feel like, have kind of a camaraderie in the same way. Mm-hmm. But it's less pretentious. You know, film is not as pretentious. There's definitely so much more.
That's so true.
There's so much more like across the aisle. Like, because if you hate Superia, you know, I love Superia, and we're both like, you're wrong, but we want to take
it out of
It's out of love, and we definitely want to shoot together. We still want to talk about film. We're not going to hate each other for it. You might be completely wrong, but whatever.
Yeah. I feel like that's like you'll find that with like photo walks and camera meetups. Like I've been on some recently here in LA as well with some photo homies, and my face hurt from like just smile. Like I was like walking back from the walk and I was just like, I realized I had the doofiest smile on my face because I was just like, that's just like my people, you know? Yeah. And it's like, they get it. Yeah. And everybody's nerding out about the cameras and this, and like, oh, I got my Hassie this long ago. And like, you pay what for it? Like, oh my God, like, what do you have? What are you shooting? Like, it's just so good.
And it's what's funny is like, I did a video about the Leica M6 versus my F2 a little while ago. And I have my own opinions on Leica cameras, whatever. And I'm not like, I think the M6 is a cool camera, but like, it's not for me. Like, you know, I say that as I have an M6 like sitting next to me.
I was going to say, if you don't want it, you know, we can figure something out.
this is my friends, but you know, not a camera that I really like necessarily care about. But then watching your video when you got yours, I was just like, oh, I feel the joy that you felt because you were so stoked.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, seeing that happiness from like getting a camera, like I know that in like intimately what that's like. And it was like, I was like smiling, beaming, like watching the video. It's so funny.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know if people feel that way when they get a guitar. Like, are they like,
oh, yeah,
I've been waiting. Like, it definitely is like when you're passionate for something, it's like, there's nothing else like it, you know?
There's nothing else like it.
Yeah, man, I love it.
I love it. We'll be right back with listener question for Christopher right after this message from our sponsor.
Support for Analog Talk also comes from Polaroid Originals. Go to PolaroidOriginals.com and use the offer code AnalogTalk10 at checkout to receive 10% off your next purchase.
Just wanted to pop in quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only developing nights. It's a develop and hang. We all get together, we grab some film, we grab some developer, we mix it up, we have fun, we talk, we laugh. We're also going to be bringing in some special guests, some former guests of the show, to hang out. And again, it's a Patreon only exclusive. It's probably the best way to help support the show. So head over to patreon.com/analogtalk, check it out. And yeah, that's it, guys. All right, guys, this is part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from at 155 millimeter film. And they ask, do you have a bucket list of certain photos you want to take? I know I do.
Mm. Oh, you do? Okay. This is a hard one because, oh man, I get so distracted by inspiration, which is a funny sentence. Okay. Just because...
No, I get that.
You know, I'll think of something that I really want to shoot. And then I'll see something else and go, oh my God, I got to do that. You know,
yeah.
I've been following Tyler Shields on Instagram for a long time. And, you know, think of what you will about his work, but like sometimes he'll post something and I'll just be like, damn it. Like, that's what I want to do.
Yeah,
he took a picture of this kid in a, I think it was like just in a swamp, like his kid up to his like thighs in like the swamp water. And he goes up to the kid and he just like takes one frame with his Hasselblad and he's like, oh, we got it. And then that was the whole thing. And like the picture ended up being, it's a very, I mean, I don't remember exactly what the picture was titled, but it's a very, it's a controversial image and it's very like heavy in the, in its message.
Yeah.
But it's a gorgeous image. And it's one of those things where it's like everything I wanted to shoot before I saw that image doesn't exist anymore. Now it's like after seeing this image, my inspiration is like changed. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, just to answer the question, because it's a good question, I really want to photograph in space.
That, ooh.
Not necessarily any specific photograph on my bucket list, but there have been, you know, a handful of people who have been in space to take photos, obviously, the Apollo missions, and there's a photographer, Chris, I don't know if it's Michelle or Michael, but he... which is funny because that's my first and middle name. he's gone on some upper atmosphere flights in this airplane and he's taken some photos up there at the edge of space and I'm infinitely jealous and they're such great images. So if I could somehow make it to space, that's my ultimate. I've always been like a NASA nerd. Since I was a kid, I've wanted to be an astronaut. You know, the F2, when I first started buying like the Nikon F2s, you know, the AI lenses, they look like the same lenses they use on the, you know, the Apollo missions and stuff. This just looks like something NASA would make. So like, I love these cameras. It's just like, that would complete my life if I could take photos in space. So maybe one day we'll see, if Elon Musk can stop being an asshole for 4 seconds and just like, you know, figure things out and stop being a douche, we'll get there. But hopefully someday. So that's number one.
Yeah, I love that.
I saw a thing that said that there's going to be, it's kind of like an ISS, like space station, but it's going to be like a bougie hotel that's going to be floating in space where basically millionaires can, you know, just take rockets up and go to this place. So it could potentially happen.
I hate the idea of a hotel in space. bougie hotel.
Right? I mean, come on.
I mean, in practice I do, but in theory I like it, but oh my God. Anything else for millionaires? I don't think they need anything else. We need full access space travel.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, as far as bucket list, I think that's number one, and through 10 is space.
I wasn't expecting that answer. I love it.
Well, what's yours? What did you guys think of that, about that question?
Ooh, flipping it back on us.
Yeah, give it to me.
Timothy.
Yeah, oh, me. You said you had some, and Chris, you've got to have some too, I'm sure.
So, I mean, a lot of it's more so just like travel photography, like places that I want to go shoot kind of. Before, you know, I pass, I definitely want to go see the pyramids and kind of take photos of that. I would like to actually do some like meaningful work, like thought provoking, not so much like the image gets some thought by looking at it, but like me, I put some time into it. Cause like you said, you know, when you get those photographers that basically make a whole movie set just to take one photo, you know, like there's just something so awesome about that. And it just takes doing it. I think we get stuck all the time where we think, well, how could we do that? And it's like, dude, you have five friends that would totally light something for you.
Yes.
You know, do this and act for you and do that stuff. Like, come on, you know, it's just taking the step. But that definitely, like, some travel locations and some meaningful portraits are definitely on the bucket list.
What about you, Chris?
I would say I can't wait to photograph my kids.
Oh, yeah.
Like, my future kids, you know? Like, that's, like, a bucket list for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But also, like, I just want to keep making work that, like, makes me happy, you know? I want to keep, learning new things and trying new things. And like, I really want to get back in the studio with musicians. Like, that's like my favorite thing to photograph.
Yeah. I love that. That's so great.
Yeah.
Oh man, there's a photographer in Nashville, and her name escapes me and I hate myself for it, but I've been following her for about a year now, and she mostly does like studio musician photography, and her stuff is so good, and she shoots on film. And I got it. What's her
pull
name?
Pull it up.
Damn. So she's based in Nashville.
Are you talking about Laura Partain?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, she's a former guest as well.
Yeah, that's
she's
right.
Been on
yeah,
show. She's killing it. Yeah.
Her work is incredible. Yeah. Right? So I've been following her and just like loving everything she does. I think she's, you know, going to be one of the best photographers of our generation.
Yeah. Right.
Speaking of which, you know what? That reminds me. I was trying to think earlier who my favorite photographers are, because I figured inevitably that question would come up. And I was trying to think like, who are my favorite photographers, like living and present? And I think like, all of them, with like a very few exceptions, are women. Like all of my favorite photographers in the industry, that like living or alive, are all women. Like Annie Leibovitz was the reason I got into photography. Career amazing. Spans everything, you know. Diane Arbus, I've had her book since I was a kid. Diane Arbus has been, you know, her work is a little bit more esoteric, but she's got such an eye. And then, you know, Vivian Meyer, of course, when her stuff came out, it was just like, Jesus Christ, like, how can you not love this? And then a lot of my friends who are gifted photographers, like, you know, the work that I really like have been drawn to have been mostly photographers who are women, or who are, you know, femme presenting. And it's like, I don't know why that is. I just think like, it's really weird that there's a big disparity in the film community between what photographers are getting the platforms and being seen, and who's making the really compelling work. Because I really think that like, the women in the community right now are doing some of the best things I've ever seen. And like, why is it all men, you know? Yeah. And so that's a whole nother thing. We could do an entire episode on that, I'm sure. But so I just thought that was like an interesting thing that just remembered that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Laura, her work. Yeah. Like you said, specifically, like, I'm like, I got to get back in the studio. This is just like,
Do it. It's so funny because like, I've had friends who've been like, how do you do studio photography? Like, not just like in the studio, but also like with musicians, or like anything that's like indoors that you have to like kind of like cheat light with, or like use strobes. Everyone thinks that it's so difficult and like a mystery. It's like, no, you just got to turn on a light and do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's so good. Yeah.
Should we ask him
Well, I thought we were doing a coffee.
That's what I was about to say. Question. Should we ask him?
Oh.
Yeah.
Should we ask him?
I'm sorry. Usually, should we ask him the tough one?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God.
So we're gonna give you a second question, Christopher, if that's okay, because you're the coffee guy on YouTube. So we have this question from Smith Snapshots. Mm-hmm. They ask, favorite coffee so far?
So is the question just favorite coffee so far, or is there more? Okay.
That's it.
That's a hard question because...
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Do you mean favorite varietal? Do you mean favorite region? Do you mean favorite roast? Wow. Do you mean favorite roaster? Like, what do you mean? So, in general, my favorite coffees are African coffees. I really love anything out of Ethiopia, especially if it's natural processed. The reason being is that natural processed coffee allows the coffee cherry to naturally ferment and kind of fall off the bean, and that imparts some very fruit forward flavors when you roast it, especially for like a lighter roast. There have been Ethiopian coffees that I've had that just straight up taste like blueberries, and it's mind blowing. Some of them have some stone fruit. It's like the very, very apricot, very peachy. And it's one of the things where you kind of like grow up and you're like, okay, coffee is this like bitter brown liquid, but then you get coffee that's like really handled with care and you're like, holy crap, the flavors, like what is happening? Like, so I would say if I was going to go real broad, I would say I really love African natural processed coffees because they're very good and very interesting.
I have to get some recommendations from you.
Oh yeah, I'd love to.
I want to try some blueberry coffee. Yeah, that sounds delicious.
Definitely, I'd love to help you with that. Also, as far as like, if I want to get down to like a coffee company, like a company who roasts coffee, there's a coffee roastery named Maru in LA. There's one in downtown LA where they roast their coffee, or in the Arts District, sorry. And then there's one in Los Feliz on Hillhurst. I'm friends with the guy who owns it. His name's Jacob. I met him when I was going there a bunch of times a couple years ago, but they just consistently roast the most satisfying coffee. I'm not sure exactly what it is that they do, but their coffee is like, their roaster is just like on point. Everything I've tried from them, no matter what the origin is, has been really, really enjoyable. Their cafes are gorgeous. Their staff is knowledgeable and amazing. I've just this week had some really incredible espresso from there. So Maru Coffee is a place that I would recommend to anyone, especially if you're in LA. But I know that they sell it online too. So if you go onto their website, you can order their beans, and you should definitely support them because they rule.
Oh God, I bet it smells so good when you go in.
Oh my God, yeah, because it's got that roasty smell. Yeah, it's like bread almost. Yeah. Oh, it's so good. Yeah. So good.
Man, well, great answer. Thank you. As well.
Long, but I think it made, I got my point across, I think.
Yeah, and great answers to those two questions, by the way.
Thank
as
you.
Well.
Definitely. Thank you very much.
Now for the tough questions.
No! Yeah. Dun, dun.
I'm ready.
All right. So it's a two-part camera question we ask every guest at the end of the show. It's like everyone's like dreading this moment because, you know, you've already bitten all your nails off thinking about this. Mm-hmm. But it's the desert island camera. Mm-hmm. You know, you can only choose one. It's your baby. It's your ride or die. It's, I'm trying to think of another
day word your day for that, one, but your partner, your side yeah. piece. No, wait.
But yes, and there, you know, it's a fully stocked photo lab on thy island. Oh. So, you know, any film you need and processing, you know,
cool.
It's there for you. But what camera and why?
Nikon F2. Not a question.
Ooh. Quick answer.
I had a feeling that was going to be
yeah,
the one.
So yeah. It's funny because the video that's coming out on Thursday is my Nikon F2, like, reveal all, like, why I shoot it and what's so great about it kind of thing.
Oh, great.
So, cool. Works out. Long story short, it's a marvel of modern technology. It's just designed super well. I think that it holds up to similar Leicas as far as build quality. It has all the features that I could possibly ever need and nothing I don't. They're rugged as all hell. My Chrome F2 has been with me for like 5 or 6 years, and I've smashed that thing into every conceivable surface and have had zero issues. And it looks, it's such an amazingly iconic looking camera.
Yeah. It is.
It just looks like the quintessential photojournalist camera. And it's just, it just takes fantastic images, and the lenses, you know, Leica lenses have their own kind of like fan base, and it's rightfully earned. Like they have their very own character. I think that the Nikkor lenses are the same kind of way. They have their own fan base because they just are fantastically amazing lenses. I actually film all of my YouTube channel videos on an X-T3, but with an adapted 24mm 2.8 Nikon
oh,
lens.
Oh, awesome.
Because it just looks so good. And I don't have to do any like weird like softening or like fixing in post. It just looks good and I'm done. So yeah. And it's just like, you know, it's not medium format, which I love medium format. I have like a big soft spot for, you know, 6x7. But this is just like, I can't deny how reliable the F2 has been in my kit and how much good work I've done with it. So yeah, that's my camera. Don't even need to think about it.
Love it.
Great answer. All right. So then the part two is the white whale. Is there, you know, something that you've had your eye on that you just never had the chance to shoot or own or?
Yeah, I had to think about that a little bit. So, you know, I had
the lusting camera.
Yeah, you know, I had a Hasselblad. I had the EL500, which is the electronic version that automatically wound for you.
Yeah.
I really liked that, but I felt limited by the square crop. I do love the Hasselblad 500cm. I think it's just a fantastic system.
Yep.
And they look, it's just like style and class. Like,
yeah.
You know?
They are, yeah.
Oh, the white whale. I mean, oh, man. It's tough because I have, okay, so the cameras I own now, I have a RB67. I have a Rolleiflex 3.5T. I have two Olympus XAs. I have two Nikon F2s. I have my Pentax 645N.
Oh yeah.
Which is my workhorse for medium format. That camera is so good with the 45mm lens. Oh my God. I can't really think of a camera. The Mamiya 6 and 7s are really neat, but I'm not a huge rangefinder dude in the first place.
Yeah.
I'm like trying to talk it out so I can like try to think of what it might be.
If you're satisfied, that's a good place to be.
I mean, you know, I've always wanted an M3 because it's just iconic Leica. It's no nonsense. It you know, doesn't have a light meter, which I love, because there's no need for a battery. There's no need to worry about anything. The you know, the M3s hold up really well over time, and they're beautiful cameras. But I don't really, I could buy one now, but I just don't really need one and don't really care all that much to have one at the moment. I think eventually I'll own one. Man. Yeah, this question's tough because I can't think of a single camera that I've not been able to shoot, because I've shot pretty much everything at least once. Yeah, no, I'm satisfied. It's hard to say,
but oh, that's like good. That's,
you know, good. The RZ67, I got the 6x7, I got the Pentax 645 for my 645 stuff. I've got the 6x6 with my Rolleiflex. I've got, you know, my F2 and my XA for my 35 millimeter stuff. You know, it's really nice to not be consumed, because I love gear. I love talking about cameras, but I'm not consumed with the side of it where it's like I need to buy stuff. And I think that's a good place to be. It's also would be disingenuous of me to be lusting after cameras a lot if I'm have a channel where I'm like, it doesn't matter what camera you use, just find a camera that works and have fun with it. Because I think the important thing with photography, with film especially, is finding a camera that you want to pick up and want to like take pictures with.
Yep.
That's going to be the camera you're going to take pictures with. You know, so there's no, when people ask me like, what camera should I get? I have no clue. What do you like? What camera do you look at and you go, ooh, I like that. That's the camera you should get. Doesn't matter what the features are. Doesn't matter how much it costs. Like you get the camera you want because that's the camera that's going to inspire you to create. And then down the road, if you want to change to something else because you think, you know, you want it for whatever the reasons are, there you go. But the important part's to get out and create. And so I'm satisfied. I have everything covered. I think if I can say, maybe I have one desert island, or not desert island, sorry, one white whale would be like a really good working condition, like Graflex, like speed graph, like a speed graphic. Yeah. I've never shot 4x5. Kyle McDougall has a video about how he picked one up in a thrift store and shot it, and it was beautiful. I think, there's been a couple of videos I've seen, and I've just been like, okay, that's really neat. I think I could really do some damage with one of those. But once again, if I come across one, you know, I'll get one, but I'm not like, ugh, I need it. So, that's my answer.
No,
the
great,
M3 and the Speed Graphic are both great answers.
Yeah, good cameras, you know, not the most expensive, but also, you know, not necessarily just falling out of trees, so, yeah.
Right.
But that's a really great place to be, though.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, making the photographs is kind of the most important part, you know, like, and being creative and not being held down by the gear, because I finally hit that zen moment where I'm just like, wow, it feels good to not be on eBay every 5 seconds looking at cameras.
Like, and crying.
And crying, for real.
Just take my offer of half, please. I shot all of my images from, you know, sophomore year of high school to like after college with one Canon AE-1 with one 50 millimeter lens. Yep. And I was totally satisfied up until that point.
The kit lens was on my first Pentax.
Yeah. And you loved it, right? It was great.
Yeah, it was the best.
Yeah.
Shot a lot of work.
But as you,
in my early days,
as you get through work and as you start taking more pictures and learning more, then you start to realize, oh, there's other things out there. And that's where it starts. But but I've gone through that whole cycle because I've owned four Pentax 6.7s. I've owned seven Mamiya RB6.7s. I've owned four Olympus XAs. I've owned three, just the two F2s. Yeah. And then a myriad of other cameras. Like I've gone through the process of buying and selling and buying and selling. And it's such a distraction from creating. So it's like,
definitely,
if I don't care about buying cameras, I'm doing much more work and it's much more satisfying.
Man.
So true.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Well, Christopher, this has been fantastic. Thank you for spending your afternoon with us. We are so happy to chat with you, and I can't wait to see what else you got going on in the YouTube world and everywhere else.
Thank you. I'm so happy I got to do this with you guys. This was a bucket list moment, I would say.
Aww. So,
thank you so much for having me. This was really great.
Of
next time there's an LA meetup, I'll be sure to hit you up.
Yeah.
You should come meet the gang.
Please, yes, I would love to come out. That'd be great.
Cool. So where can everybody check out the channel, the what you got work on your website? Where can everybody find you? Instagram, all that?
Oh my God, I haven't even said the name of my YouTube channel once yet. So so my channel is called The Photo Department. So if you just search photo, The Photo, DEPT, so it's the abbreviation for department, that's me on the YouTubes. There's also a Photo Department Instagram if you want to follow that. That's going to have all the stuff that's associated with the YouTube channel. All my personal work and my professional work goes on my, I guess, personal Instagram, which is just my name, Christopher Michael Sturm, just spelled out. And I think that's it. That's all my stuff.
It's a great name for a channel, by the way.
The Photo Department?
Yeah.
I wanted to invoke, yeah. I wanted to like invoke like the feeling of like when you're in college and the college is like this old 70s yeah. building and it's like a like, you know, an old like Helvetica plaque that just says The Photo Department on it. Looks like straightforward.
It reminds me of like the people on set, like the AD and that whole gang, that yep. Photo Department.
Yep. I just wanted it to be like inclusive to everything. So hopefully, I don't know, hopefully it works. It's not as cool.
Love
as
it.
When I found Grainy Days, I was so mad. I was like, why didn't I think of that? Like, oh, that's perfect. Such a good channel name.
It is good.
What about you, Timothy? Where are you?
Guys, you can head over to Instagram. It's at Timothy Makeups. I also make some film photography YouTube videos. Easiest way to find that, just go to the search bar, type in Timothy Makeups. That's it for me. Chris, where are you?
So I am Chris B. Photo on Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. We are Analog Talk Pod on Twitter, Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram. And we have a Facebook page and a group you can join. And we also have a Patreon, too.
Woo.
Should shout that out at the end. Christopher, thank you, thank you, thank you. This is awesome.
Thank you guys so much. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you guys in the next one. Bye.
Bye.
First off, Chris and I would like to thank Christopher for coming on the show. Christopher, we love what you're doing with The Photo Department. We're super stoked that we finally got you on the show. We got to hang out and chat and have a good time and get to hear your backstory and how you got involved with all this stuff. It was a blast and had a really, really great time. Thanks again, Christopher, for coming on the show. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. For only $1, you can get the show 2 days early. That's Monday. Normally release it on a Wednesday. We also have our develop and hang nights over there. You know, Patreon-only exclusive content. And to be completely honest, Patreon is literally the best way to help support the show. If you guys are, you know, the diehards and you want to help support Chris and I with keeping this thing going every week, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. A bunch of Patreons that already help support the show. Guys, we do not know what we would do without you. We appreciate each and every single one of you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. That's it, guys. That's this week's episode. Again, Christopher, thanks for coming on the show. And we hope you guys are out there shooting, having a blast. The weather's starting to get nice. It's feeling good and it's feeling right. All right, guys, that's going to be it for this week. We'll see you next week with an all-new episode. Later.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.